B2. Number 22B.
Now, this seems to have been the point of revelation for Mrs. Eddy, where she could see that I am mind. That when we are mind, that when we are spirit, she would say, then we find out that we are life, truth, love. With all the seven synonymous terms, she gives there a sense when we are mind, spirit, soul. So from that point out, looking out from that point, she wrote the textbook. But little by little, she changed that textbook so that the last edition can hardly be recognized with the first edition. Some of the titles of the chapter are still the same, but only a few. The text was changed and changed and changed because she presented being in the first edition from the point of view of that oneness as such. Oneness as such. Then she began to see that people who were reading the textbook were misunderstanding it. That when she was saying that when we are spirit, that with that we, they would understand their own mortal self. And therefore were spiritualizing their material and mortal nature. And that was naturally not what she wanted to do. That those big statements were misunderstood, and so she began to break down that revelation to a form which was adapted to the thought of our age, namely through categories and categories, classifying that one I am, that one ego, that one I into its classification, so that the human self and human mind would be giving itself up and adopt and accept the purer ideas first. So today we have a textbook with 16 chapters, and therefore all those 16 chapters, when looked at from the point of view of oneness, give each chapter a different view of oneness. And that's what we want to do now. We will take the 16 chapters of the textbook and see from the point of view of oneness. You have this chart in front of you with the title Oneness in Science and Health. So let's see that teaching of oneness, which is so prolific in this country from all sides of metaphysics and dissenters of Christian Science, is not such a simplistic sense of oneness that just one is one. But the oneness is a oneness in every way, in every direction. And here the textbook gives 16 quite distinct sense of oneness which would deal with duality. Every time in each here on this chart, in every chapter, I will give a short summary of the oneness, and then beneath the belief of duality which is corrected by it. First of all, we take the big headings on the top just to see that the first four chapters, the word, show oneness as man's unity with God. Can you see that? First four chapters have the main tone showing oneness as man's oneness with God, so to say. Then the Christ, the next vertical column, shows God's unity with man. See, has a different view of unity. The first in the world is man's approach to unity and shows the unity of the world, namely man's unity with God. Then the Christ is always that which comes from God to man, But here it's no more a translation, because that would not show unity. Here it is shown that God and man is one. God's unity with man. Then the third vertical column, Christianity, which gives the third set of four chapters, show one universe. You know, we always have seen Christianity as the point, is at the point of idea, of effect, of the outcome. So universe is the outcome of the principle of being, and shows now one universe, that the universe is one. And then in the last column, science, we have that oneness in another way, namely one integrated science, that understanding is one, that science is one, therefore that the whole concept of how to understand and what that understanding brings to us and so on is shown in its oneness of being. Again, can you first see the natural and ordered layout of the textbook and how they really pinpoint those four sides of oneness, the Word, the Christ, Christianity and science? We always in the Word had the approach to God. Now here it is not an approach to God. It's now man's oneness with God. The Christ we always had as a translation, but in the oneness there is no translation. It's just showing that the principle and its manifestation is one. God and man is one. Then Christianity, we had always the outcome of the Christ idea as the universe of idea, and therefore it shows from the point of view of oneness, it shows the one universe. And then in science we always had the scientific explanation or interpretation or understanding of being, and here shows therefore that understanding is one. It's a terrific point here about understanding. Alright, let's go quickly through these 16 chapters. Always only with a view on what sense of oneness does she bring out in each chapter. Can you see that in order to make this chart here, I would have to go through the whole textbook and read, say, the first chapter. But read the first chapter not just as the chapter as it is written, but to take a definite conscious standpoint, namely the standpoint of oneness, and ask oneself, what sort of oneness does the text of the first chapter present to me? So interwoven and giving the whole touch and feel of the text brings out a definite sense of oneness. What is it? In prayer, I epitomized it and said, acceptance of man's unity with God. That's oneness. To accept that oneness. That's the very first point, you see. That because there is fundamentally man's oneness with God, prayer says, all right, accept that oneness. And naturally this does dissolve the dualistic sense that the petitioner is separated from God. You can see at once what an enormous step this would be if we would see the chapter on prayer from the point of view of oneness, because theological prayer has a petitioner somewhere down here and a petition somewhere up there and tries to call down the blessing from God. Scientific prayer sees if there is oneness, we have to accept oneness. Therefore we have to accept that the petitioner and the approach to the petition and the petition and the blessing of the petition are all one. You know, I have stated that more explicitly in that little pamphlet, the scientific, the spiritual principle of prayer, where I tried to show, you see, that in the chapter on prayer, You deal with a petitioner who tries somehow with a means to reach God, the petitioned, so that the petition comes down to us and gives us a blessing. It's a fourfold feedback again, you see, an input and the process and the output and the feedback, a constant interchange from petitioner to petitioned, and prayer comes along from the point of view of oneness and says, there are no four. Everything is one. There is not somebody who can pray to God. If there would be somebody who could pray to God, then he would have to be separated from God. Therefore, Mrs. Eddy shows, only that which is Godish can pray to God. Therefore, only that method which is God itself can have communion with that God. And therefore, God can only give that to us which is of the nature of God. So everything, the petitioner, the way of prayer, the petition, and the blessing that flows out of it, are all of the same nature of God. And that makes prayer, therefore, very simple. It is, therefore, giving here that fulfilled sense of prayer where the petitioner and the petitioned are not two, but one. It is the Spirit of God within you that prays. I don't pray. Not my mortal thinking prays. Not my sense of lack and distress goes and prays. That's no prayer. Such prayer God doesn't hear. God only hears his own voice. Therefore his own nature. So we can only pray aright if we approach being with the danger of being itself. And that naturally is already the answer of prayer. Right prayer is a right answer. That's why Pascal, you know, the French philosopher and so, he said in English, how would it read? Thou couldst not seek me if thou would have not found me. See, that's the paradox. We could not seek him if we wouldn't have found him. Only that which is of the nature of God can really seek. So we have already found him. That's the oneness of being. We go further to atonement and Eucharist. And I've said here, exemplification of man's unity with God out of atonement with God's power. These are naturally very brief epitomes which show that only we can have atonement out of atonement. That only because fundamentally we are atoned, we can be reconciled. So that atonement says, don't try to reconcile you with God. But see that you are one with God, that you are at one ment, at one mind with God. Seeing that we have that mind, which is the mind of God, then we have found atonement from the point of view of oneness. You see, all these chapters will take away the burden and the struggle of working for something. All these chapters will tell us we are there, we have arrived. We don't have to arrive somewhere. We are in being. So because there is at one meant, so to say, atonement is at all possible. This dissolves the belief that man can atone out of himself or through vicarious efforts. See, if we try to atone ourselves through the thou shalt and thou shalt not, then we go out from being separated from God, from duality, that we have to do something through some effort to be atoned, to be all right with God. Whereas from the point of view of oneness, we drop all that stuff. and say, well, man cannot out of his own effort really achieve anything. She says that God is the power in the messianic work. Not we, not our shout and shout not, is the power that can achieve anything. So again we go out from the oneness and see we are at one with God, and that is the power for the exemplification of our unity. So in the measure as we have within ourselves the consciousness of at one with God, in that measure we exemplify the atonement of God. Then in marriage we have a different sense of oneness. Here I tried to epitomize and said man's unity in God is really man's unity with the universe. The moment, you see, the moment through at one moment I am in God, you know, Christianity is always that which shows that we live and move and have our being in God. The moment we are in God, and God is the sum total of the universe, we are one with the universe. And so we have oneness of the universe. So unity with God is unity with the universe. So we have one universe. Can we see? People today long to see peace in the universe, to have one universe, that there is no quarrel in the universe. Not all these oppositions and struggles in the universe. And they try very hard in a Christian way to overcome that. They don't try very hard to set that right in a scientific way. Namely, they first have to be right with God until one can be right with the universe. No man can help the universe before he is one with God. Not possible, because the universe is God's creation. And so we cannot start with marriage and say, well, there is only one universe, and therefore in that one universe all should be harmony and just should be one grand concord. The universe is the outcome of the world and the Christ. And so the world will not find peace. Will never be able to solve the world's problem, never, before they don't know and understand better what is God. When they begin to see what is God and then atone consciousness with that one God, atonement and Eucharist, then only as we are one with God and God is all, we really are giving our, we are really in one world and can demonstrate one world, not before. Only when each one of us has the same principle to which each one goes, we have a common denominator. Only that is that which binds us together. Man is not bound together with other men direct, but only via its principle. You know that very well. You meet, say you love music and meet somebody who loves music, and you understand each other wonderfully. Why? Because each one knows the principle of music. And so you are not talking person to person, really you are talking each one with its principle and communing over the principle of being with each other. So the world, what the world means is a better understanding of God. Better understanding of the spiritual principle ruling the world. Before that is not achieved, every human effort will just fail. Will just fail. It's like trying to help somebody who has no money and giving him money and money and money and money. You can give that money to that person all the life long. He will never get rich. But if you can make him see that he does not need money, that he is rich, what abundance is, and give him the consciousness of abundance, then he has abundance. And so it is with the world. The moment they begin to see the principle of relationship, the principle of being, Then they can live together harmoniously, not before. The counterfeit is that man is an ego of its own. See, that's the duality, that man has an ego and God has an ego and they are separated. Then in the chapter on Christian Science versus Spiritualism, I have put here indivisibility of spirit. This is the oneness, that spirit is indivisible. Is indivisible. Therefore, man's understanding of God and God's understanding are one. Think of it. That whole chapter on spiritualism shows that so clearly. Shows so clearly that man has not an understanding of its own with which to reach the understanding of God. Now, if we analyze our mentality, I think we all can say, well, we try to understand God with our understanding. We try to somehow see that our understanding becomes clearer and purer and I don't know what, so that we can understand God. Instead of seeing understanding itself is a quality of God. See, Mrs. Eddy says understanding is a quality of God. Therefore, there is no use to try to see something more about God until one accepts for oneself that one is the understanding of God. Because only the understanding of God can understand God. Only spiritual understanding can understand spiritual understanding. This is the great mystery. Nobody really wants to see that. Everybody thinks that with my ignorance and I can approach God. Now, with that ignorance doesn't understand God. So I must rectify that ignorance more and more so that I can understand God more and more. This is duality. It's meaning that there is ignorance and there is understanding. That's duality. Unity, oneness means that man is one with God. And as God is understanding, man's understanding and God's understanding are one. Period. Therefore, the way I study the textbook is very different from most other people who study the textbook or the Bible. I don't study the textbook by going to the textbook and say, well, I think I'm a bit dumb and so. Today I'm not quite happy and very awake, and so I wonder if I can get something out of that textbook. I approach the textbook, and before I begin to read, and sometimes that takes me half an hour before I read and study, I just go back and see that I am the mind of Christ, that I have the same mind as that mind which has written the textbook. That mind which has written the Bible or that mind which has written the textbook is the same mind which I have right here and now. And that mind which is God communes with that mind which is God. Mind communing with mind. And if you approach a subject in this way, it's completely different. Then if you approach it and you say, I don't know it, and it's very difficult to understand it, I wonder if I ever will understand it. If we approach it that way, we'll never understand it. Because we have the duality, that we divide the understanding of God and the understanding of man. Mrs. Eddy said, there is no division of mind into minds, of spirit into spirits, of soul into souls, and principle into beings. That's spiritualism. This division of trying to divide that. Whereas understanding, mind, remains mind. And understanding is a quality of God. So God and understanding is one. Man's understanding and God's understanding is also one. It's also one. No use to think one can enlighten ignorance to the point of understanding. What happens is that understanding enlightens ignorance. but not that we can with ignorance understand something. It's not possible. That is duality. So our whole approach to a subject, it's man's unity with God in that whole column, our approach to God is always that we know that we know, that we know that we understand, that we know that we have the same mind as is presented in the book we study. And so we don't feel that that book which we study is something foreign to us. What it resolves is shown here as dividing spirit into spirits, as I have said. Or that the understanding God with mortals understanding. That's the duality. It's no use to say God is one and then say I don't understand him. Then God is not one. God is only one when I see I understand him. Because in the I am, in the infinite I am, there is only understanding. There is the understanding of God, there is the understanding of Christ, there is the understanding of man, and there is the understanding of science, all four sides. See, they're quite a different approach. Yes, let's take the second vertical, the Christ, which shows that God and man is one, and that there is no separation between God and man. Animal magnetism, I said, only one standpoint is at work, God. And that standpoint, God, only knows good. So, can you see what the oneness here is? The oneness is only to have one standpoint. What's the use of saying there is only one God and you don't take the standpoint of God? Then you say there is another standpoint. And that's duality. Can you see what I want to show with this 16th standpoint? That the question of oneness is a very diversified question of oneness. That there are so many aspects and facets. Can you say facets to oneness?
Yeah.
See? And that we have to see them, or else we just take one and think that's the whole cake, and then it doesn't work. And then we think we haven't done something right. Naturally, we haven't done something right because we have not been universal enough. So animal magnetism is really that. See, when you ask me what is animal magnetism, here you have it from the point of view of oneness, namely not to take the standpoint of God. That's animal magnetism. And to be afraid of animal magnetism is that we are not taking the standpoint of God. Naturally, when one doesn't take the standpoint of God, one jolly well has to be afraid. Because it doesn't work, you see. But it isn't animal magnetism. It isn't somebody being malpracticing on you. It's that malpractice which we have on ourselves when we say, I go out from myself. I regard myself as a person. I regard myself as a very important person. I regard myself as a person that can be attacked and so on. Then I go out from a wrong standpoint, and that's animal magnetism. In the chapter on animal magnetism, she brings out very, very clearly there is only one standpoint to take, and that's that standpoint of God which only knows good. I'm so sorry about the people who live around about Boston. Really, really. When they live about 10 or 20 years around Boston and the Mother Church, it's difficult to get them out of their ruts again. They seem like worms on which you have been treading. No more freedom, no more the spontaneity, always fear, around every corner there is fear. No, it isn't true. God is not in Boston, not around Boston, God is a standpoint of consciousness. At standpoint of consciousness that I go out from God and that sees only good. There is no animal magnetism. It is only good. I don't be afraid of it. I don't need to be afraid of what I say and how I behave and what I do and what I write. And nothing. I can be a very natural human being. As long as I just try as much as I can to go out from principle. From the one standpoint. animal matter peace resolves here what I have said, going out from another standpoint than God. That's animal magnetism. Or to think that God works good and evil. I think this often I must take that question of animal magnetism, because in Europe that question is not very en vogue, it's not very important, because people are too far away from Boston. They don't see. They are still normal and living a normal life. But I think it must be awful to live from morning to night, and from the first day to the last day of the year, constantly under the impression that there is good and evil at work. That there is an evil power at work. It must be awful. When there is only one. And there is only one. So the highest you always do according to your conscience is always the best you can do. It's good. It's good at that point. It's good at that point of evolution. It's good at that point of experience. So we all can love each other and can be happy about each other, whatever any other one does. We always know there is one being at work and everything can bless him. I am is the law in every situation. And why should we be afraid about it? Oh, well.